I got the itch one time, scabies, but I never did get lice.
Therein is the story, I suppose.
Well, we got stuck on the road between Gannat and Fort Defiance, my brother and I, in a snowstorm. And we slept in a hogan overnight. And we slept on the sheepskins on the floor. You know, as you say, do I remember being dirty? That was the most uncomfortable night I can remember. I don't know whether I was cold or whether I was, but I was physically very uncomfortable. And Daddy dipped us when we got home in the bathtub. I can't remember what we had. I don't know if we had lice or scabies or just what we had.
Probably lice.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now, I think it's very important for you and Jackie and what's your other sister?
Ruth.
And Ruth.
She's the oldest. She'll have different viewpoints than we do. I think you'll find that Ruth, well, I don't know, I won't, I mean, this is something that I'll be interested to see.
Yeah.
Their viewpoints, how they come out.
Well, I think what we'll do is is put these initial tapes together and talk over what we've learned and then how we proceed with your father. So
okay.
We've done all the groundwork we can do before
we get
talk
to him.
So we tire him as little as possible. But what I was getting at was I think it's very important for you individually and the three of you together to decide what aspects of your father's life you want stressed. What particular, now you mentioned the fact that you think that he'll be remembered for the land work that he did in the land, and we'll certainly exploit this.
And also the work that he did toward building up the Navajo's herds. He spent a long time, and I don't know where he got the authorization or whether he even had authorization to buy these sheep and stallions and rams and things that he bought and brought back in here to breed with the Indian livestock.
Okay, so this would be a second factor in addition to the foresightedness of purchasing land, which we know even today is a very vital part of the Navajo policy. Do you think that we ought to also work on the should we say upbreeding of livestock?
I imagine that's one of, I suppose that will be what he would probably be the most remembered for. But the thing that is dearest to his heart is the idea of this land. Now this is still dear to his heart. There is a big piece of land in Arizona, it lays in Arizona and New Mexico. It's called the Red Lake Ranch. And a dear friend of Daddy's built this ranch, a Mr. Jacobs. It's the only last piece of land left in this part of the country that's completely deeded. There's no tailor grazing or anything in it. And he wants, he wanted the tribe to buy this piece of land so desperately because it lays right in adjacent to where the tribe should be. And he's been trying to do this for years. And when Mr. Jacobs died, he left it in his will that only Daddy could be the realtor for this piece of land, which was quite a compliment, I feel, to Dad. And last year, a big firm here in New Mexico came to him and said there was a group of men, syndicated group in California, wanted to buy this piece of land. So Daddy kind of half-heartedly went at selling this. And at that time, the Jacobs family decided they wouldn't take it because it was they were making money off of it and they would keep it. And then just a few weeks ago, another big money outfit in Texas has come in and told Dad that they'll offer them $25 an acre. So he called the Jacobs family and I think they're going to take it. It's a $2,850,000 deal. And Daddy's not the least bit happy about selling it, irregardless of the great commission that he's going to make off of it. Because he wants the tribe to have it. This is what he has felt that the tribe should do.
Well, what is the tribe's present stand on this?
Well, here again, they are, they must be tied someplace that they can't purchase this land. Because all the men in Windrock that he's talked to the land management men and the Navajos themselves have wanted this piece of land for years. But even right today, they cannot get the go-ahead, the permission, the money, the something to buy this land. So here, even when he's 80 years old, he's still frustrated by the fact that here lays this piece of land that for years he's wanted the tribe to buy. And he's the only one that can sell it. And Mr. Jacob did this so that Daddy could hold on to this for the tribe because he knows how dear to Dad's heart that this is. So the only thing that's going to squelch this deal, it'll sell now, is that the Jacobs family does not want to take cash for it. And the Texas people want to pay cash for it. So, so isn't that a hang-up to have $2,850,000 cash? So tax-wise, neither, I don't know what
of course
the
status
is now.
That's the number one problem in selling real estate today is
right.
Tax angle.
But this, I really think if Daddy could sell this ranch to the Navajo tribe, I think he'd be ready to die. I think that would, he'd be finished with it then.
Well now, we talked last year a little bit about the Scabies. Business, and from the work that I have done since then, I found out this was really the major problem.
Yeah.
Livestock problem.
Now he said that he started, they had never dipped for scab, and he started building dipping vats, and in about 4 years he had it licked. And then they continued to dip for lice and ticks for many years. They're not doing that now. And I don't know how long it's been since they have. And I asked him the other night, I said, Daddy, why did they quit? Should they still be dipping? And he feels very strongly that they periodically should dip for lice and ticks. But he licked this scab problem in 4 years. And I would imagine if he went there in 1929, so he didn't get started until 30, so you might look that up between, compare your dates there between 30 and 34, 35 and see what
happened. Yeah, well I happen to know that if my reference is correct that scabies had been eradicated except for two small bands down in the southern part of the reservation by 1938.
Uh-huh.
So I think what your figures represent are for his district or the area that he was working in, because he didn't operate over the entire...
Yeah, he did.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He was in charge of the whole thing.
Well, it's possible that it's an earlier date than 1938.
Well, now maybe I've got... maybe he went there in 1929. Maybe it took him a few years to get it going.
But I kind of feel, though, that in this this battle to get the Navajo to accept the dipping, there's a very worthwhile story
right.
that needs to be told.
Now, this is his baby. You see, he did this. He designed the bats. And he and the Bureau of Animal Industry worked together, the veterinarians here, who were some very good friends of his. That was a group of men that he got along with very well. They worked together. The veterinarians, I think, worked out the formula for the dipping formula. But Daddy did all of the dipping, all over the reservation. He dug the holes and did all the work, used to bring them in, and I have many pictures that show us standing in the corrals and so forth with all these sheep. That must have been a tremendous undertaking. And they had to log all this, you know, keep records of, as they went through the vats, everybody's own flock and so forth. But I don't think Dad had an awful lot of problem with this because I think that he was so well known among the Indians or worked with them so that they understood that this was for their own good. There was not opposition to the dipping, was there?
Well, of course, I can only speak from what I've read, but it appears to me that the dipping and the livestock census count are somewhat tied together. Anytime that the government officials, whether they were stockmen or range riders, could get the livestock together, they tried to develop a method by which they could identify a person and the number of stock that they held, because as I'm sure you know, you were not allowed to own more than a certain number of horses. I think 10 was the maximum.
And this was the thing they fought, the census.
They fought the census. As a matter of fact, do you recall an Indian by the name of Black Hawk?
No.
I don't remember his Navajo name, but there's a story that I want to clarify with your father about his being so upset by the census taking that he brought a group of young Navajos out of the hills and came down to Shiprock and were ready for battle. And this is in the 1930s, most people.
This isn't the story where they kidnapped the range rider, is it?
No, that's another one. That was a fellow by the name of Curly, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, uh-huh.
No, that's something else. But this, you asked whether or not there was opposition to the dipping. I think there was opposition. I don't think there seemed to be too much question about that. But your father, as he also has told me previously, modestly, was able to sit down and reason with them because he was a stockman. And because he could point out to them very clearly that their wool would weigh almost 60% more if they were able to get rid of the scabies. And that the traders would pay them more, and as you have already pointed out this evening, the Navajo are very practical people, and dollars and cents, it seemed like a smart thing to do. But where the difficulty arose was in the attempt to try to cull out the sheep at the same time that they were dipping.
Yeah.
And when a family brought in a certain number of ewes or lambs, then the stockmen also tried to identify who owned what lambs and then get rid of them.
Yeah, and they never quite succeeded at that because the Navajo people are very, very cagey. Have you ever been to a dipping bat?
Oh yeah, well I have dipped a lot, but not on the reservation.
With the forked.
Oh yeah. I wanted to ask your dad, I wanted to ask you about it too, but is it true that the women played a big part
in it? The women did most of the dipping.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I don't know what the men did. They sat around on the fence and talked and laughed and played poker. Not poker, some sort of game. Almost all my recollection are the women dipping. We used to stand on the... Oh, my, it stunk.
That's a very strong smell.
Yeah, and the women would gather their skirts up, you know, tie them in a big knot here in the front. Yeah. I was worried so for the sheep. I was just sure they were going to drown, you know, and that sometimes they'd go under.
Well, a lot
and they'd
of them,
dig them back out.
Of course, they lost some, and this was another thing I think that created a certain amount of friction, because occasionally they'd get this strong solution in their eyes, or they'd get it into a cut and they'd die.
Uh-huh.
But
you could smell a dipping bat for miles, you know. But it was quite a social function too, because they'd always have a squaw dance, you know. And people would get together from miles around when they'd come into the vats to dip. And of course Daddy spent a lot of time away from home doing this. And my brother went with him. He spent his summers going with him. There were several really fine men that worked on this with him. John Dibblebess was a man. Now, I think John was probably a range rider.
Yeah, now, this is a name that I had trouble spelling.
Oh, I have no idea how you spell it.
I've heard your father say it. It sounds something like D-I-B-L-E-B-E-S-T.
Right. Could be.
It's
I think he was a Dutchman.
Was he?
I would imagine so. He used to cook very good beans and garlic. More than enough that we had the dipping vat to smell, we had to have beans and garlic. You're going to get a different story from my older sisters. I think Jackie and I felt very close to the people, to the Navajo people. But I don't think my older sisters had the feeling that we do for them. For the people themselves.
Well, as a historian, all I can tell you is that there is no real truth when it comes to reconstructing the past. You have to do the best you can.
Right.
It's just like four people standing on four different corners and watching an accident. each one has to file a report, and each one will give a different
opinion
of who's at fault and what happened.
Well, it
so
would
the
be
best
interesting.
We can do, that's why I want to speak with each one of you before we go
yeah.
to your father, because I think that this will help help draw conclusions later on when we try to tie it together.
It would be interesting to know why out of the 6-7 of us, why we all came away with very different opinions. Why you would have thought that in a family this size that we'd all been more or less the same. Now Bernice, my other sister, she wouldn't even have a thing to do with it. She chased the Navajo, she wouldn't have a Navajo rug in her house. She doesn't want anything to do with it. She wants to forget everything she ever knew about the reservation. I wonder if the social stigma didn't kind of get to Bernice.
Well, I don't know, but I think your father talked a little bit about that informally last year, and that was the impression that I had also.
Uh-huh.
Well, a couple more things before we cut this off. But
okay.
I wanted to summarize a little bit what you feel should be stressed.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the land purchasing,
mm-hmm.
and we mentioned the upgrading of the livestock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably you agree that even though the dipping may not have been a problem, it was a major achievement. Your father should take the credit for it.
Yes, I think the credit is, the credit is definitely Daddy's on that. Because I think he organized the range riders. And I think he organized the dipping, and I think he organized the whole thing.
Well, now what about his organization of the Navajo chiefs themselves, the clansmen who obviously had so much control over whether or not this thing worked. Do you think this is another area where your father has perhaps a civil service diplomat?
Yes.
Could be mentioned?
Yes, because I think at this time, if Mr. Hunter had left, and I don't know what year Mr. Hunter left that country, but from the time Mr. Hunter left, and the whole base of operation went into Window Rock, I think the whole program of the superintendent and the Navajo deteriorated clear down to nothing. Because I think that the superintendents from that era on were government servicemen. Boy, they went straight by the book. And you can't go by the book with Navajo people, or I say Navajo people because that's who I know the most about. But you have to go by the heart, and you have to go by the head, and you have to use the book when you can. And I think that Daddy, because by this time he had built up a reputation among the Navajos that he was a stockman, I imagine this was his foot in the door. And I don't think Daddy ever felt superior to the Navajo as a man. I think he admired him as a man. I think he admired his philosophy. I think he admired his way of life. I think he admired everything about it. And I think that he had very good friends among the upper class Navajo and among the lower class Navajo. Now, when you said that we had people like Howard Gorman and Chi Dodge and those in our house, we had people like Buck Martinez and the truck drivers, and everybody else ate at our house. I mean, if they came at dinner time, they were invited to eat. And if we went to their house at dinner time, we were invited to eat. But I'll bet we were the only house in Fort Defiance where Navajo was invited in to eat a meal. I think we were looked at as kind of strange people.
Well, yeah, that was probably one of the sources of criticism that came from other government service people.
I'm not exactly sure how much my mother liked it. I don't think Mama disliked it, and I think Mother liked the Navajo people. But I don't think Mother loved the Navajo people like Daddy and I did. And my brother, possibly. I think she was a little bit Southern. And I remember one time when my grandmother Allen was very old and came to live with us. We always had a Navajo girl that lived with us and helped Mother. It wasn't like she was a hired girl at all. She was one of the family. But because we had so many children in our family, and because of Gerald and our invalid sister, Mother had...